Today, documentary films are experiencing a major renaissance, and for good reason. But why are audiences increasingly choosing fact over fiction?
Is it a dearth of realism, like endless comic book sequels and end-of-the-world action movies? Are viewers choosing authentic storytelling over spectacular visuals and far-fetched plots?
Or maybe it's because docs f***ing rule. Hi, I'm Parker Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And we host SupDoc.
We didn't go to film school. We're just two comedians that dork out on docs.
And since 2015, we've been recapping amazing documentaries with comedians, actors, and filmmakers like legendary comedians Dana Gould and Todd Glass.
Musicians like Yacht and Dan Deacon.
And even media stars like Jesse Thorne and Francesca Fiorentini.
The AV Club called us enlightening, and Boing Boing said, SupDoc is a great idea for a podcast.
So find us wherever you get your podcasts or join us at supdocpodcast.com.
And follow us on social media at SupDoc Podcast.
Welcome to the Escapist Comics Podcast. I'm Jessica Balboni.
I'm Jesse Hitt.
And today we have a special guest in the house.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done an interview.
Has it?
I don't know. Feels like it.
I know. Well, like a month ago.
Okay.
That's
a month is a while.
Yeah, that's true.
Like a 12th of a year, it feels like, thereabouts.
I mean, it's almost 2020.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's been like almost a year since last year.
Yeah. I'm saving up for a flying car. I think 2020 is going to be the year.
It's going to be the year. There's a hovercraft now.
Yeah.
Like a real, and like a rocket pack, like Boba Fett. I'm saving up for that.
Yeah.
So I can fly
away.
Seems
like a safe thing for a person to own. Like, I don't foresee any problems with that kind of stuff. Like, I think it should work out very smoothly.
Totally.
We should introduce our guests.
We have a special guest. To rocket packs?
Yeah. maybe he knows about rocket packs.
Maybe he does. Hi. Hi, special guest.
We got Frank Gogol, everybody.
We do. Welcome to the show.
I'm not even sure what to follow with.
Well, this is how we do it here on Escapist Podcast. Comics Podcast. Yeah. I don't know what's happening anymore.
Writer of Dead End Kids.
Writer of Dead End Kids, number one.
Source Point. I almost said Source Forge, but that's a different.
What is that?
I don't know. It sounds badass, right?
Oh, maybe they also, Lion Forge also swallowed up another comics company.
No comment.
He knows the insider information.
Dead End Kids, number one, pretty much sold out everywhere.
Yeah,
Blowing up the Key Collectors app, probably. I just found out about that the other day.
Me too. Don't feel bad. I wish I had known. I'd take advantage of it sooner.
Yeah, totally. I always wonder what people are looking at on their phones when they're upstairs going through and just intently digging through the vintage bins. And now I know.
Definitely porn.
Yeah. Just on the side. Just getting a little horny upstairs in the vintage comic section.
I mean, it's pretty blocked off.
That's true. It is. You can't see anything below the waist.
I'm seeing cameras around here, so.
Yeah.
We're off topic.
We're not the most high tech store in the world.
Just because I don't see them doesn't mean they're not here. They're definitely here.
Yes, they're definitely here. So, Dead End Kids number one, your first, well, not your first book, but your first single issue.
Yeah, single issue miniseries.
Yes. And it's only three issues,
right.
Which I also just found out today.
Yeah.
What made you decide to do just three issues for a first series?
I'm cheap and everyone else is cheap.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's like a facetious way to put it, but it was more affordable to make a three-issue miniseries versus a six-issue miniseries. Mm-hmm. From what I know about selling comics, after issue three, you'd see a lot of drop-off and, major drop-off. For each successive issue. So I just wanted to keep it, tight and tell a good story and not drag it out. And, since most people before Wednesday didn't know my name and still probably don't, three issues was a smaller investment ask than, $24 for six issues over 6 months. That's a lot.
Yeah, totally. And what is the story about?
It's about three kids in the late 90s who are trying to solve their friend's murder. So like Stand By Me meets the Hardy Boys, but a little darker, a little more violent. Mm-hmm. A lot more 90s.
I did enjoy that it's clearly set in 1999, and that's very well established both by sort of the narrator and then by the setting and the music that they're listening to. Very solid.
The posters on the wall.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction?
Almost none of that was me, I admit.
Oh, really?
I'm a pretty tight scripter, so like most of the visual stuff I leave up to the artist because either they're not going to like what I put or they're going to do their own thing anyway. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to sort of box them in. And, you know, I read a story about Alan Moore writing Watchmen for Dave Gibbons. Mm-hmm. And essentially it was Dave would have to go through the script and highlight in two colors who was in the panel and what they were doing. And then there'd still be this wall of text because Alan would have all these details and camera angles and all that. And I read that and I was like, I don't ever want to be that guy. It makes him work harder. Mm-hmm. And I think most artists appreciate the freedom. So I just, Nana had added a lot of the posters and a lot of the little visual cues. And you know, I got it back and I was thrilled because, if you read the script, you might not be able to tell as much, honestly.
Well, what made you decide to write it in the 90s?
That's when I grew up. I'm slightly younger than the kids in this book. 1999 was a really good sandbox to write the story in, so I was set on that. I would have been like 12 in 99, so they're about a year and a half older than me. And it's just what I know. Like, you know, they say write what you know, and I'm a big fan of like a love-hate relationship with coming of age stories. Like I love them and what they stand for, but I don't like the way they end up being executed. Mm-hmm. And most are set in the 80s right now. And I wasn't around, so it doesn't really speak to me.
Right.
So I wanted to, a little selfishly write a book for myself. And that's the other thing they say, right? Like write what you would want to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Did you have a murder story in your childhood?
Well, I used to have a brother.
Did you ever murder anybody in the chat?
Did you ever murder anybody there?
Are we cracking a case right now?
Well, it said write what you know. Did you murder anybody in
no
the 1999?
Comment.
Okay. No, we get it out there. I mean, there's a lot of shit happening right now.
You ever see that movie, The Good Son, with Macaulay Culkin?
Yeah.
Biographical.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
There's another one where he shot the mannequin onto the freeway and made the cars crash.
Yes.
I remember as a kid thinking, like, oh, that's very cool. Like, as an adult, I'm like, oh, Jesus.
I like when he's skating in circles, having fun with his sister, but he's like really cutting a hole in the ice and fall through.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was wild, man.
I don't think that would actually work in real life.
That's probably true. Yeah. I'm very thin ice, maybe.
That movie is loosely based on The Bad Seed.
Oh, really?
From the 50s.
Oh.
Yeah. No one knows what I'm talking about, right?
Is that another one about an evil child?
Yeah. She's a little blonde girl, pigtails, very scary, black and white. No.
Just another story about women being portrayed poorly.
Yeah,
I know. See, men taking over the industry.
Yeah,
patriarchy.
They should do a reboot of that
of The Bad Seed.
Yeah,
totally.
With a boy.
Yeah, right. An all male reboot.
Reverse
Ghostbusters.
Possibly call it The Good Son.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. It could also star another Culkin. No, they're still breeding them. There's a whole farm.
Wow. Is it breeding or do they grow them in tubes?
Probably that. Yeah.
Could be a clone farm situation, I think.
Tube of Culkins with red lips.
Weirdly enough, the newer ones are better actors. I think they've improved the model.
I think they have too. I heard Culkin was supposed to be in the Joker or the new Batman movie.
Oh, really?
And then they canceled him quickly. Yeah. Not good enough, Culkin.
It's possible.
Yeah, I could see him as a Riddler.
They could just cancel him like as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
he's done enough.
They tried to do that.
Yeah.
With drugs. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
Listen, if at first you don't succeed.
True. I hear he has a band now.
They're pretty good. They're pretty good, surprisingly.
Pizza Underground, right?
Yeah. Also to the 90s with Culkin.
Yeah.
So back to the comic. I don't know what I was going to say. Oh, what would you go with the color palette that you went to? If that was the artist's choice?
Nanette works in like a pretty desaturated color palette when he colors, and he colored the book.
Okay.
But that was a conversation we had between Nanette and Sean Letter. I really wanted to do something sort of evocative of like Russ Wooten, who does a lot of Rick Remender's letters for like Death or Glory and Deadly Class, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But no borders on the word bubbles, no borders on the panels. Mm-hmm. And to make that work, you sort of have to work with a desaturated color palette to really make it seem like it's part of the art rather than on top of it.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to sound effects.
Right.
So that was just like a vision I had in my head that the team came together and made happen so I wouldn't have a tantrum.
Okay. And it's set in Like New Jersey?
Secretly, yeah. Secretly? It's never said, but that if you're looking at Paige, I think, is it four?
Mm-hmm.
Has Tank's bedroom. He's got like a
Giants and Jersey Devils.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Yeah, I grew up in New Jersey, so Nanette stuck those in there sort of as like a little Easter egg to sort of situate it geographically.
Yet I hear no Jersey accent.
There is no Jersey accent. This is an entire conversation. So there are three areas in New Jersey. This is heavily debated. There's North Jersey, there's South Jersey, and there's Central Jersey.
Okay.
A lot of people can test that third one, but I live there, so it's real. If you fold something in half, it's got a middle. So basic logic. Uh-huh. But people from South Jersey have a more southern accent. They sound like people from like Virginia in a weird way. Even Philly people sound like that. Yeah. People from North Jersey have a very sort of classic Manhattan, New York, sort of Bronx, Brooklyn kind of thing going on. Central Jersey is like a complete lack of accent. Like they've done studies in central New Jersey where I grew up, like Hunterdon County, Monmouth County, sort of Mercer County, have like the most neutral accent of all. Like we speak words the way they're most supposed to be spoken like.
Whoa.
I never knew that. Yeah. I have a lot of family in Long Island and like New York and stuff, and like all the they all sound terrible.
Well, have you ever heard Bruce Springsteen talk? He grew up sort of near where I grew up, and he's got a very neutral voice as well. But he's like the New Jersey guy, right? Danny DeVito, kind of.
He has a pretty thick accent.
Yeah.
But he plays it up.
It's not really an accent.
Too.
It's more like a way of speaking. Jack Nicholson's the same way. But if you look at some of like their early work, it's a lot more neutral. They both grew up like right where I grew up. Kevin Smith is another guy who grew up where I grew up.
No discernible accent.
Yeah, he doesn't have an accent. That's true.
Yeah.
So. What do you know?
There's one other place, I think it's in Ohio, where they have a very similar sort of phenomenon with accents.
Aren't you from Ohio?
No, Kansas.
Oh, Kansas.
We have
that's
a weird, like, cadence more than an accent. I mean, drawing out vowels.
You've got sort of like a beachhead vibe.
Yeah, I've been here. I mean, I've been in California since I was 11. But in the Bay Area specifically. Like, I've never.
Well, what's funny is my relatives in Long Island say I have a California accent.
Oh, I get that, yeah.
And I was like, there's no California accent. It's just flat.
Yeah.
Liars.
there's more of like a vernacular for California than an accent. Like they're like
it's more just we like to talk about highways.
Yeah. Although Southern California, like Orange County, has its own like a very bad accent. Maybe my least fair. So like
it's like a fake Martha's Vineyard.
Yeah. Like Southern California and like the Maryland, like the Dundalk accent, are probably my two least favorite ways for people to talk.
There are a lot of people I wish just wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
Well, yes, there's that.
Too. Regardless of accent.
What other like comics or movies or like inspired you to start writing?
Two comics and there are three comics in particular. The Crow was like the first comic that like kind of blew my mind because I think most people don't think too hard about it. It's like this violent sort of mystical story, but it really is. It's like Romeo and Juliet. It's very much a love story. And I was like, oh, look, there's this dark and violent indie comic that's really like one of the most romantic stories. This guy loved his wife so much, or his girlfriend, so much that he literally came back from the dead to adventure. I mean, that's pretty deep shit for what that comic is portrayed as and like generally believed to be about. So there's that. Kabuki by David Mack was another one
beautiful
that sort of did
comic.
The same thing.
Yeah.
It's a cyberpunk comic, but like with this really, really deep sort of sub story about a daughter and her relationship to her mother and avenging her mother for like the atrocities that were committed against them.
Yeah.
And that one's got some really cool visual stuff that like, there's some great pages where like it will be eight panels and each one will be a different image, but they all sort of blend and sort of, it's a weird sequence that visually that he does some really cool stuff in there. And I feel like that book finally got the attention it deserved when Dark Horse put out the nice oversized hardcovers.
Oh, yeah.
So those two, and then Demo by Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan.
No one ever talks about that book, and it's so good.
Yeah, it's like his least.
There are so many copies of it in the world. Like everywhere I go, I see a copy.
Yeah.
But that one was really just, I think that was the biggest influence on my first book, Grief. Like it's down to earth stories about people going through like just normal shit, and there's some mystical or supernatural or superpowered element in the background.
Yeah.
And like that was like very understated. And I was like, okay, comics can talk about serious things and still be comics, like, you know, air quotes, you know, superheroes and all that nonsense that I love, but, you know, is not the kind of stuff that I'm super into. I like things that, you know, for lack of a better word, matter. Mm-hmm. I like to comics that talk about things. And that's the kind of books I want to write. So those three books, I think, all straddle the line, like, pitch perfect. Like, they can be cyberpunk or fantasy or, mm-hmm. you know, superhero and still talk about shit that matters.
Yeah. That's awesome. And those aren't three books that you actually, like, hear most about. People are always like, Watchmen.
Yeah, true.
Or,
Watchmen's
like,
great.
I mean, Watchmen is great. And it definitely has its place mm-hmm. in history. But those are always like the first books.
Well, you know what? I'm pretty story driven, and Watchmen has like a crap story. It really, I mean, it's just, it's a whodunit. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's like so verbosely and exaggeratedly mm-hmm. told. But, and that's where like the value in the book is, it's in the craft. Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. how did Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons achieve telling the story the way they did, not necessarily the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely a super important comic history for sure. But it's definitely not like my go-to comic. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm not recommending.
Yeah.
I mean, just like to put it in perspective, I reread those three books I mentioned maybe once a year just to refresh. And I reread Watchmen every 3 years. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe. Like, not on purpose, but
yeah.
that's probably how it would shake out.
I'll always look at Watchmen
again. Yeah.
There are particular issues. I would say the fifth issue is the one that's like a reverse of itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, that one I look at a lot. I'm like, how the fuck did they do that?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's good storytelling.
Yeah.
Are you going to watch the new Watchmen show?
You know, I don't know a whole lot about it. I have my finger on the pulse a lot of the comics things, and I just, I mean, I guess I'm not interested. I'll probably check it out, but
yeah,
it just doesn't, I don't understand why we need it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I like the idea that it's not an adaptation.
Me too.
It's like a continuation.
I think that's the way selling to do point it. For it. I don't know a lot about it. I'm hoping it's set somewhere down the line and we don't see mm-hmm. a lot of the original characters.
Yeah.
If anything, I think that's what's making Doomsday Clock work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That it's its own thing and it's not like, cause I just heard a thing from Dan DiDio and I don't hear a lot of things from Dan DiDio that like really blow my mind. please hire me, Dan. he talked about how comics as a, like as a market is being entirely too nostalgia driven. And I think that I agree with that.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't write a book about nostalgia. I agreed with that. And I think that that's maybe the approach. Like don't worry so much about the past, like forge the future. I think that's why House of X is doing so well. It's like,
I completely agree with that.
And honestly, having read what, 3 of the 12 issues now, like it's not entirely abandoned history. It's just building a whole bunch of new shit for it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, Jonathan Hickman is a mastermind.
Moira McTaggart is interesting.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
how is X-Men has been dead for so long.
At least since Astonishing. In 2007, I think that ended.
Definitely.
And
I
the stuff that came immediately after, the Brubaker, the Fraction, the Gill and stuff, was pretty good. But like ever since that, it's been
terrible.
And despite having great creative teams on, like there have been X-Men titles since then that I was excited about when I saw who was writing and drawing them, and then somehow they just never got a foothold.
Yeah,
you know what? I feel like there was like a little bit of it was a closed sandbox. We weren't allowed to do a lot in there.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Same with Fantastic Four. And now that things have changed, and X-Men is all the better for it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Hopefully it'll stay that way too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully Hickman doesn't try to do anything cute. That's one of the things I love about him is he's very straightforward and he doesn't try to be cute or humorous in a lot of cases. Like there is humor, but it's all situational and it's not like cutesy dialogue.
Oh yeah.
That'll take me out of the story real quick.
Man, he has just got such a knack for writing like an epic line of dialogue.
Yeah.
Like every quote at the beginning of a East of West is a line from the book.
Yeah.
And it just, maybe it's because I've been trained to, but it always feels epic.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Oh, that book's coming to an end.
I know. I'm so bummed.
Yeah.
East of West and Lazarus both ending around the same time. That's going to be tough for me, I think.
Yeah.
Going to be struggling for a couple weeks.
Like the fall of Image.
Yeah.
Black Science is ending.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like all of those books that like started Image's like giant rise are like coming to an end. Oh, what are we going to do, guys?
Now we got to hire Rob Liefeld back. I think that's what's going to do it.
I don't think that's going to do it.
I don't know if you guys have been reading Major X. It's comically bad.
Pretty epic.
I would like to co-write a book with him called Pouch Man. Like,
I can't tell if he's serious or not.
I don't think even he knows.
I don't think he knows either.
Like, he's one of those people that doesn't understand what's funny about him.
No.
And so can't, like, harness it.
But he has all that money now.
Yeah.
That Deadpool money.
Yeah, sure, man. Good for him.
Created this character that I stole from somebody else.
Get those drawing lessons, learn how to draw feet now.
Yeah.
Never gonna learn. Putting them on backwards still.
Yeah, it's hysterical. They did one of those Marvel Legends action figures. and if you've seen the packaging, like you can only see from like the shins up. And when they did the Deadpool line, he was like, oh, look, they did it like my drawings.
See, he is. Yeah. He does think it's funny.
Yeah, I think he's self-deprecating. He's a talented guy. I think I don't know. How do you get ahead of that? It's tough.
And then, computers.
And then is it him who's got all that drama with Youngblood right now? Like, I mean, it's just, I feel like he can't get out from under it. If, no. if he did and could take like 6 months, it'd probably be fine.
He did sign that sweet Netflix deal, though. So yeah. I don't want to know what those shows are going to be like.
Camera doesn't go below the shins.
Yeah. Sweet. They can't be any worse than like the OA. Like Netflix has put out some true garbage and some great stuff too.
I could not disagree.
Oh, really? I hated it so much.
I hated it so much.
I hated it, but it was like the ideas they were playing with. Like that felt like a Jonathan Hickman TV show.
Well, it felt like it could have been good, and that's what was so disappointing.
Yeah,
but see, like I'm like a half full kind of guy. You know what? So think about it. Like, you know, we're gonna get like the multiverse and the MCU now, and like. You had to like slow build of that and like teach people these things and like make the public, the general mm-hmm. public, like be able to digest these concepts because comic nerds know these things. My grandma doesn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But like the OA is going to be a foundational show for people, like for future shows. Like it was so necessary, even if it was bad.
But why was there season two?
I don't know. Like, well, you know, and it felt like a different show with the same characters. And then the cliffhanger for the third one was literally a different show with the same characters.
Yeah,
maybe it's part of the plan.
Maybe
it's one of those things you just need to see the whole tapestry to understand it.
Yeah,
we got more Phyllis though, so never a bad thing.
Yeah, well, I think everyone should watch Society. That was a good show. That's my rec for the week on Netflix. The show nobody's watching about a bunch of teenage kids, kind of like Lord of the Flies. Ish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but...
Solving a murder in the 90s?
Yes, exactly. Okay. No.
Sounds like a great story.
It's a wintertime setting also.
Well, so what do you have coming up next?
That I can talk about?
Yeah, that you can talk about. Tell us all. That you can't talk about. Tell us, no.
I'm actually working on a bunch of stuff for Kickstarter next year.
Okay.
Like, I feel like that's... There's a couple different markets in comics, and mm-hmm. like the Kickstarter market's more siloed from the direct market. Mm-hmm. And I had a good like experience doing my first one a few years ago. So I got a couple one shots, like just little sort of one offs. One's sort of like for lack of a better word, it's like a fucked up fairy tale modern take on Pinocchio.
Ooh, okay. Nice.
It's about an inventor who does like self driving cars, and he's just kinda cocky, so he puts this kid in the car for the test drive and kills him. Mm-hmm. So he builds himself a robot son, but like he's got some pretty sinister intent. I don't want to say any more about that.
Yeah.
It's going to have like a nice sort of Scotty Young cartoon kind of vibe to it. It'll be interesting to read because it's going to be like very at odds with itself from the art and the story.
Yeah.
We got another one shot that just started getting drawn by Ahmed Raffit, who I don't know if he's ever been published in the US, but I think he's in the UK.
Yeah.
he's of Egyptian descent and he's just super talented.
Cool.
So that's sort of a late 50s golden age Hollywood slasher.
Ooh.
Yeah, so pushing the slasher genre back a decade.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then I have one more thing that's going to be on Kickstarter sometime next year. It's a sort of semi-autobiographical drama piece. It's called After the Storm, and it's sort of about my experiences after Hurricane Sandy and like seeing like the community aspect, like what happened after the cameras stopped filming, like the disaster portion of it.
Yeah.
It's about a woman who like lost her husband recently and is really struggling with that, and then this all happens, and it's a whole big mess for her, and I like it. It's not in a whole watercolor style.
Nice.
I try to do like one for me, one for them. Like I like stuff like that, and you know, but murder mysteries and aliens and stuff like that are really cool too. So I want to just
explore.
Treat both habits, I guess.
Yeah.
Or indulge both habits.
Yeah.
I do have a book coming from Source Point next year that I can't talk about. But if you like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or The Boys, not The Boys, The Lost Boys.
Okay. I mean, that is a weird combination.
I don't think you could tell a good Buffy story in the universe of The Boys. That would be bad. No, Lost Boys, vampires. Because, Buffy. And then I started working on like a Power Rangers versus Alien kind of mashup.
Sweet.
Yeah, that doesn't really sell it. We're still working on the pitch for it, but that's working. I just started writing sort of like my Indiana Jones, like Indiana Jones meets The Prestige. Okay. So I got a lot going.
Cool. Nice.
The next probably 3 years are in the works or done by now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of stuff.
It's a bright future.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, we look forward to it.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being on today.
Thanks for having me.
Totally. Yeah.
Everybody pick up Dead End Kids number one if you can find it.
Yeah. You can't.
Yeah.
We have a few copies left here.
When's this going to air?
Monday.
We'll put it out on Monday.
Monday? Yeah. All right. Yeah. So then I can tell you guys. The second print will be announced on Monday.
Awesome.
Nice.
So if you missed the first one, your comic shop can order the second printing and you can get it. And they'll have basically the same cover. So
awesome.
Same experience.
Yeah.
And you can also order number two from us here, and number three, I think it's going to be on the FOC this week.
Yeah,
September 25th is the due date, so it might be past even.
Ooh.
It's close, but reorders.
We're close. Anyways,
we can order more.
We can order it. So
the print run exceeds the orders, so there's time.
Okay, so call or write.
Yeah.
Instagram.
Yeah.
You know where to find
tweet
it.
Messenger pigeon.
Yeah.
Whatever, smoke signals. Whatever you gotta do.
Yeah. Come on.
Buy the book. I insist.
Knock on the window.
Don't go.
Get a ladder. Climb up. Knock on my window.
I do not suggest that. Please don't do
back
that.
To the beginning.
Definitely don't do that in my house.
Well,
my dog will
if
murder
you're
you.
Walk in with a jetpack, you can get one.
Do that. That sounds more fun. Thanks, guys. We will talk to you next.
Yep. See you later.
Bye.